It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs with Mitchell Dye. Brought to you by Corio Waste Management, station sponsor.
With you on the line now is Professor Leanne Tilley from the University of Melbourne, and we want to look at this issue of funding for malaria research. Professor, good morning.
Good morning, Mitchell.
Now, Melbourne University has just received funding to undertake malaria research, is that right?
That's right, yes. And Mitchell, we've got some funding from something called the Global Health Initiative Technology Fund, or GHIT. So that's actually a Japanese government initiative.
Right.
And what it does is it co-funds Japanese pharmaceutical companies to work with academic groups. So we're really excited, obviously, to get some of that funding. The idea is that companies will work with to find solutions to diseases that affect the poorest people in the world.
And malaria is obviously one of those. I mean, I think it's a big problem in tropical areas usually, isn't it?
That's right. So, yes, malaria kills probably about 600,000 kids every year. That's mostly in developing countries. It would kill a lot more children, even more than that, if it weren't for the activity of one drug class. Okay, it's called the artemisinins, and the artemisinins are currently saving the lives of hundreds of thousands of kids every year.
Well, I remember having to live in the tropics and having to take malaria medication, obviously, to prevent it. And one of the big questions was, why can't you vaccinate against malaria?
So it would be fantastic if we could develop a vaccine against malaria. And there is, in fact, a malaria vaccine which is about to be registered. But it has a success rate of around about 30%. Now, that's helpful, obviously, for when you have a lot of kids who are dying of malaria. But you or I wouldn't be very happy with a vaccine that only had a 30% success rate.
No.
Clearly we need to do better. In the meantime, we're very heavily reliant on drugs. And the really sad thing is that the drugs that we have are currently losing their efficacy. So there's a really critical sort of race on at the moment to try to develop better drugs we completely lose the ones that we have.
And is that because malaria obviously mutates and becomes resistant to some of these drugs?
That's right. So yes, often drugs aren't used ideally. Drugs should always be used in combination to try to prevent the development of resistance. But sometimes, unscrupulous people provide substandard drugs, or the drugs are not used correctly, and that of course always encourages the development of resistance.
And malaria is spread by mosquitoes. I mean, obviously, they've talked about the idea of having more mosquito nets on beds at night just to prevent mosquito bites, and that would help with producing malaria. But once you do become infected with malaria, what's it like? I mean, what's the symptoms and what's the prognosis?
So bed nets are fantastic. That's really been a major initiative in terms of decreasing the number of deaths. It's brought the deaths down from probably about 2 million to 600,000. Still a lot of deaths, but that's really made a big difference. Once you actually get infected with malaria, the malaria parasite gets inside your red blood cells, and then those red blood cells stick to blood vessel walls, and then they burst out releasing toxins. Now, it's those toxins that cause the problem, particularly if it occurs in your brain. You get these cerebral symptoms, which means that the patient goes into a coma, and once they're in a coma, they very often don't recover.
And what sort of timeline do you have from being bitten by a mosquito to getting to that point?
So the mosquito first gets into your liver, so it's probably about 2 weeks.
Right.
From the point at which you're actually infected to the point at which you get seriously ill. Once you get ill, particularly if you don't have any immune system, or an immunity against malaria, as if you were a traveller, you or I, if we got infected with malaria, we'd be in big trouble.
So you're saying when the mosquito bites that you could have 2 weeks of no symptoms whatsoever?
That's what can happen, yep.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it will appear.
Yep, and what's the sort of first symptom that a lot of people have that makes them go, I need to get help because I may have malaria?
So usually what you would feel would be fevers and headaches and sort of upset stomach, a lot like flu symptoms. But yes, what you've got to realise, if you've been in a tropical country, it's very important to get that checked out immediately, because once the coma starts, then it's very hard, even with the best possible healthcare, to get you out of that coma.
And if there is an early intervention and you do go and seek medical attention as early as possible, what's the course of treatment like? How does that work?
So, well, it depends on exactly what the symptoms are. But yes, you would obviously be kept under surveillance. You'd be given hydration. You'd be given anti-malarial drugs. And at that point, you want really, really fast-acting anti-malarial drugs. And that's what's the good thing about the drugs that we currently have, is that they are very fast-acting. So they can get the parasitemia down by, you know, 6 log orders in a matter of hours. That's what you need.
And is malaria contagious?
Well, via a mosquito.
As in, like, once a human has it, can they pass it to other humans, or does it have to go through mosquitoes?
It has to go through a mosquito.
Right.
That's right. So Australia has the Anopheles mosquito, which is capable of transmitting malaria up in the north, sort of Cairns and beyond. And so it is, well, Australia used to have malaria up until about the 1970s, but we've done a really good job, obviously, of keeping mosquito numbers down, but also treating all the cases that arise.
So that's the main thing, is if you can keep the mosquito population under control, which is obviously beyond a lot of the resources available of the countries that are struggling most, then it's going to be a big driver in getting malaria down.
Yeah, and, well, getting the patients to proper health services. So if you can take an infected person and put them into a hospital away from mosquitoes, then they don't infect anybody else.
So can you just tell us about your research, I suppose, and how it is going to affect what the current situation is? Because you've talked about the fact that early intervention is required and some of the drugs are sort of losing their impacts. I mean, how will your research strive to change the current situation?
So yeah, so we've it's a very exciting and interesting finding. What we found is that some drugs that are currently used as anti-cancer drugs, including this compound made by our Japanese pharmaceutical company collaborators called Takeda, they make an anti-cancer drug, and that anti-cancer drug cures cancer or treats cancer by hitting something which is called the proteasome. Okay, so the proteasome is like a little kind of garbage bin, a shredder inside your cells that takes damaged proteins and deals with them. You need that if you're doing a lot of damage, and cancer does damage to cells. Turns out the malaria parasite does something rather similar.
Mm-hmm.
And these anti-cancer drugs are actually effective as anti-malarials. And
well,
the currently used anti-cancer drugs are probably too toxic to be used directly, so you can't just reposition a current anti-cancer drug. But what we're planning to do is to take all of the compounds that Takeda have produced over many years in trying to develop these anti-cancer compounds, and we're going to look through all of those and try and find one that specifically inhibits the malaria parasite proteasome.
Well, Professor, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all of those insights into malaria, and all the best with your research.
No problem. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, Professor Leanne Tilley there from the University of Melbourne, talking about funding that they've received to undertake malaria research. And obviously that is a very big project that is being undertaken, and just small changes, as the Professor said, could have a massive impact on the amount of lives lost. If it is 600,000 children dying from malaria, that even a vaccine that has a 30% success rate is a step in the right direction, I suppose. Well, we will go to a track of music now on Mitchell's Front Page. Coming up next, we'll be speaking to Greg McHenry to find out what's coming up on Roads to Recovery after 11 o'clock this morning. We'll also be joined shortly by Dr. John Stern, talking about the funding for the rail network in Victoria. And he will be talking about the fact that, you know, we're receiving 9% of the funding that's available federally, but with 25% of the population. And of course, a bit later on, we'll be talking about whistleblowers. It's 14 after 10.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.